There aren't many players in U.S. soccer history who can say they've won everything.
Yeah, it's like a full trophy bingo card. You have the Youth World Cup, the World Cup, NCAA title, and domestic league title. To me, that's quite flex.
Yeah, it is a ridiculous flex. It's like one of those, how rare is your name charts, but instead of Asla, it's U.S. soccer players who won literally everything card.
I gotta say, you're the first, only, and hopefully not last, Asla that I've ever met. So it's definitely a unique name, certainly more so than Michael. But, you know, luckily for us, we don't have to think too hard about who has won all of those things that we just mentioned, because we have one of those unicorns here with us today who've collected all of the soccer infinity stones, if you will.
That's right. Joining us on the show is former USWNT midfielder Sam Mewis, who casually stacked up a 2012 U20 World Cup, a 2019 World Cup that I was so blessed to be, you know, working as a reporter, three NWSL titles and an NCAA championship at UCLA in 2013. I am Asla Pellet.
And I'm Michael Lare. This is Finance of Football. Music Sam. Intro goes.
Love it. Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
No, thank you for joining. Thank you for joining. We really appreciate it. We're very excited. I have the jersey on, you know, got the four stars here, so I'm ready to represent. So
amazing.
No, we appreciate you joining us.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited about your new show.
Yeah. Thank you. I mean, usually Michael always beats me to, you know, jerseys, and he's always a step ahead. And like, I'm so jealous I don't have that. But I like, you know, maybe one of these days I will be able to get one of yours and then get it signed. So the next time I'll like sort of flex a little bit my power in front of him.
That sounds good. We'll have to make that happen.
Yeah. Wow. Three minutes into the episode and Asla's already fishing for free swag. So I love it. By the way, if she gets one, I get one. I think that's part of the stipulation as being co-host. So if you want, I can sign, you know, one of my jerseys as well too, from my high school playing days, if you want that for your
I would love that. Oh
my God, I actually
collect those.
Perfect. Yeah. You collect them in the trash can. But my playing career aside, you know, as we talked about in the intro, you were one of the most successful players in U.S. soccer history. So we'd love to talk to you just about your playing days. You know, if you can look back on them, you've been retired just over a little over a year right now. So how would you assess your playing career and, you know, maybe what's an accomplishment you're most proud of?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I mean, hearing you list back some of my accomplishments, I'm immediately taken back to college and winning the NCAA championship at UCLA, which was just so much fun. And I actually feel in retirement that I have been able to reconnect with some of my UCLA teammates in a way that honestly just wasn't possible while I was still playing. I feel like I was so busy, always traveling, keeping up with film and, you know, having a game at the weekend. And just recently, really, I've reconnected so closely with three or four of my close college friends. And I think that's been such an unexpected gift of retirement, actually rekindling old soccer friendships. So that has really stood out to me lately. And then I can't help but say that I did not win a gold medal at the Olympics, which eats away at me. We came close. We got bronze in 2021. I got to go to that tournament with my sister, which, of course, I think would be the highlight of anybody's career, sharing a moment like that with somebody in your family. I only wish it was gold, but still so lucky and grateful that I got to experience that with my sister Christy. And I did have a great career, and I'm really proud and thankful for that.
And knee aside, how much do you miss playing? Like, is it something that you still, like, your legs twitch when you watch an amazing playoff game or something?
Yeah, I do miss playing a lot. I think it still makes me really sad that I missed out on what could have been some of the best years of my career. I retired due to injury against my will. I really did do everything that I could. And I think seeing how far the NWSL has come and seeing the national team have such success, I'm so happy for everybody. And I do still have this part of me that is sad and jealous and wishes that I could still be out there playing. I think what I miss most is being in the locker room around my teammates and having that sense of like being on a team and the camaraderie that comes with that. And I luckily have found a few other outlets for like competitiveness and being physically active. I've picked up swimming, and I'm actually doing a swim race later this summer with Kelly O'Hara that I'm like, it's giving me like a new purpose in life, which has been amazing. but I do miss playing and I miss my teammates a lot.
I love that swimming. I feel that's such a good, that's just such a good workout, right? Like that's arguably the best full body workout I think anyone can do. So that's awesome. No thoughts on golf. I'm a big golfer in case you can't see all this stuff behind me as well too. I know that's a huge thing for athletes after they retire, that golf is such a good low impact kind of sport, especially for us with bad knees.
I'm so open to golf. I took a lesson once. And I think, honestly, I have like such a big frame that I actually think I could really drive a ball pretty well if I like practice. I'm so open to it. So I guess here is my, you know, call out. Anybody who wants to teach me golf, I'm open to it. I'm available.
They heard it here first. Everyone who's listening from the golf world.
I love it. Yeah, I would offer advice, but I'm not good. Just because I play golf and I also cover it doesn't mean I'm good. But I'd be more than happy to hack it up on a course with you any day of the week. So we can do that after you get some instruction under your belt.
That sounds good. Lots of future plans are being made on this show.
I love it, right? We're talking about the present and the future too. But speaking of the future, that's a great segue into the next question. You mentioned obviously playing on the national team and all the success you guys had, but it seems it's been a bit of a passing of the torch to the next generation here of players. And we have, you know, Emma Hayes is guiding the team here. So I would just love your thoughts on the current state of the national team and just, you know, some of the exciting kind of young players of this next generation that we have.
Yeah, I mean, I love how you framed that as a passing of the torch. I think that Emma Hayes has really embodied that. I think that the swagger and the confidence that we've seen from this team ever since she took over has been something that I'm so happy to see. I know that the 2023 World Cup was disappointing for the players and the fans alike. And so to kind of see that spark reignited in the team, I think in large part due to Emma Hayes's presence there has been just so awesome. It's like the U.S. women's national team that we all know and love. Their success at the Olympics last summer was so enjoyable to watch. I think I was on the outside in 2023 and 2024. And as a recently retired player / media person covering the team, I much preferred 2024. Way more fun to watch, way easier to cover as somebody in the media. So that has been incredible to see. And as you mentioned, it's a new era of some of the players as well. Of course, we still have a lot of veterans on the team. Lindsay Heaps, Crystal Dunn, Rose Lavelle, Emily Sonnet, Naomi Girma, those are players who really have established themselves as regulars. But Triple Espresso, young, turning into leaders, seeing them perform last summer in the moment that they needed to, I think made everybody so excited for 2027 because they're all still going to be young and in their prime. They have been so much fun to watch. In case anybody didn't know, that's Trinity Rodman, Sophia Wilson, and Mallory Swanson. And then some of these newer players that we saw during She Believes, like Lily Johannes, the young teenager who plays for Ajax in the Netherlands. She stepped up huge in the midfield. And then Allie Centnor, who I say this all the time on my own podcast, she's from my hometown of Hanson, Massachusetts, which is a very small town. She had an incredible tournament. I think she really stood out as a forward who can set up opportunities for herself, shoot from distance, get out of tight situations, and really scrap defensively as well. So the present is bright and the future is certainly bright for the national team.
Definitely. When you mentioned all of these, I just remember the first episode of the NWSL documentary, which you make a little cameo appearance in the first episode. Like, I'm hoping I'll get to see you more, but, and over there, like, we get to meet all these, you know, new members of the USWNT, but going back to NWSL, because that's something that is such, a league that is going through an incredible transformation. What are your thoughts on the current state of the league and women's soccer in general, not only in the US, because we constantly talk about like WSL is growing. Also, I think in relation to NWSL, there's like a talent, you know, drought situation from both sides. They're like dying to bring the best talent to their leagues. You played in England, you won an FA Cup, you know, both sides. So give us a little bit of your thoughts on both leagues and the growth in them.
Yeah, I think the growth first and foremost has been incredible. I started playing professional soccer in 2015. And in my time in the league, it has grown so much. I think not only in talent, but in the number of teams, in the number of brands that want to be involved, in the quality of coaching and front office staff that are supporting the teams and the players. That's true in both leagues. I think seeing the growth of the NWSL and the excitement around it, especially around the championship last season, Kansas City's brand new stadium that was purpose-built for women's professional soccer, that is one of the coolest milestones that I can think of happening in recent years. And it didn't happen during my playing career, but I think that it's happening now. And just this growth and this kind of boom of interest and money, the owners that are buying into the league now are super wealthy. And I think that that's changing the status of the league. They're building training facilities, they're building stadiums, they're paying transfer fees, they're investing in the best players. And so that growth is super exciting. And I think similarly, the WSL in England is going through this boom. I think that the Euros in 2022, which were hosted in England and the Lionesses won, were this, it was kind of like a 1999 moment for England, how our US women's national team won in America and kind of opened everybody's eyes to women's soccer. I think that that happened a little bit for them in 2022 with the Euros. And so I played in the WSL before that, but my experience there was incredible. I played for Man City. We had an incredible facility. I think the leagues are definitely wanting to all attract and retain the best talent. And I think that that's good for the players because somebody like Naomi Girma will say, I'm going to go where I'm going to improve the most as a player, make the most money, have the best access to facilities, train with the best teammates. That could exist in either league, and the leagues are going to have to keep pushing each other and competing to attract that kind of talent. So the game is going to grow.
Yeah,
I love that. I was going to say it's almost like an arms race now, right? Between on the US and then in England and obviously in Europe for, like you said, how do we create the best facilities? How do we attract the top talent versus playing here or there kind of thing? So I love it. And it's only going to benefit everybody in the long run, I imagine.
And one of the things, I mean, I interview a bunch of players in different sports too, and I don't know if that ever applied to you. When there wasn't a strong professional soccer league here and everybody perhaps had to play abroad, was that something for you like, oh, I wish I could play home and be close to my families? I interviewed a bunch of volleyball players recently in the last 2 years, and most of the time what I was hearing, they were so happy that there was a professional volleyball league in the US because then they couldn't. They didn't have to miss out on family, you know, get-togethers or their, you know, see their friends having children. Like, is this something that also American players, when they were, you know, like you playing abroad, had that feeling of missing out?
Yeah, I think for me, my stint abroad was unique in that it was at the tail end of 2020, so it was COVID, and there were no NWSL games. I played in for Man City for a full season, and I barely missed any NWSL games just because of what was happening in the world. I do think that when I entered into the league in 2015, the NWSL was pretty stable and growing and in a good place. But prior to that, when the previous leagues had folded, I do think that there's a sense of, yes, there's opportunity abroad, and many players took those opportunities and were successful at it. There is, of course, a sense of wanting to play closer to home, be around your family. And I also think when you mention these volleyball players, it's also a sense of validation in a way. Like, does my home country believe and support my career and what I'm doing enough to sustain a professional league? And I think that the signal here with the NWSL is that the US does. The US cares a lot. We love our national team. We love the NWSL. There's a lot of room for growth, but we're growing. And I think that's a positive. And for players, it's validation that you're doing something that's valued. And I think that that's really important.
Yeah.
And I think we're seeing that across all women's sports now too, right? Like, look at basketball, right? How many of those, the players in the WNBA would have to go overseas to try to make more money and, you know, make a living. And then now the W is raising, obviously, their awareness, you know, salaries and all that stuff on Rival to start up. So it's like, I think we're seeing that in soccer, volleyball, like Asa mentioned, and basketball as well too, that I think it's a lot of like, hey, we really need to create these opportunities for women and girls to play and succeed in our own countries. So I love that.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that years ago, even when I first started playing in the league, it was this idea of we really should create these opportunities and you really should give these women a chance. And now it doesn't feel like a charity or a like moral obligation. It feels like a great business opportunity. And I think people like Michelle Kang, the owner of the Washington Spirit, have come right out and said, I'm not doing this to be nice. I'm not doing this for fun. I'm doing this because it's a good business opportunity. And I believe in the value of women's sports. This is a growth opportunity for my business. And I think that that shift has been another one of the most monumental changes that I've seen throughout the course of my career.
That was going to be my follow-up question. Like, valuations are soaring. Like, everybody, like investors who got in first are cashing, you know, cashing in already. Like, they're selling their teams for 200, you know, times more money than they got into. So in that sense, like, what does all of this mean in terms of growing this firm? You just answered it, but if you want to like open up a little bit and see how, on, I think on the player side, is this being, you know, sort of lived or experienced through?
Yeah, I think what that makes me think about, and as a former player, I'm always, I think, prone to think about the on-field experience and product more so than I am kind of the marketing and commercial side of things. And so I think that as we've seen this growth and we've seen more wealthy owners come in, we've seen more attention and you know, brands being involved with the league, the growth and the expansion, I do want to see the research and the data for the sporting side kind of keep up with this growth. I think that we've been hearing a lot lately in the media of how a lot of studies done on athletes are done on men. Mm. And Emma Hayes has been talking a lot about this. A lot of assumptions are made about the way we do things just based on data and studies that were done on male athletes. And so I think there's a lot of room for injury prevention, for return from pregnancy, for growth for these athletes who have kind of just been doing what they've been told for years, which is not based off of studies that have studied them. So one of the things that I would really like to see is more of a focus on the sporting side. How are we loading players? How are we bringing players back from injury? How are we bringing them back from pregnancy? There's so much space for growth in that area. I think we've seen that with so many recent ACL tears. I think that there is a lot of confusion around pregnancy and coming back from having a baby, that players need support in those areas. And so I think that's the place I'd like to see a focus go into, as this, you know, as women's sports and soccer explodes.
Yeah, I love that. And I think of it like with white shorts, right? Like, I know that was such a thing that it's like, okay, great, everyone just wear white shorts. And it's kind of like, I don't know if that's really going to fly for us for obvious reasons. And now people are like, oh, okay, actually we should change this. But it is that kind of, if it works for the men, it will work for the women as well. And it's like, no, that's not the case. So it's, you know, it's like in marketing, right? It's like shrink it and pink it. You have a product, make it smaller and just make it pink and great, sell it to women. It's like, that's hardly the case. So I love that you brought up the fact that like these organizations, from whether it's the physio side to just uniforms or whatever, that it's like, you need to consider women's players separate and individual from just, you know, an afterthought of the men's side.
Exactly.
Yeah, plus, white shorts, they didn't even work for men, right? MLB players are also uncomfortable with that. No one wants white shorts.
There is something about an all-white uniform, though, that is just clean, like right before the match.
Like, I hear you on that.
Real Madrid, the Galacticos, like, I think they wore white shorts, right? I know it was definitely the white top, but it's just, there's something so clean about it. And then you go and play and they get dirty. But, you know, Sam, you mentioned creating opportunities for women's players specifically in the U.S. and U.S. Soccer just announced that they're going to make a bid for the 2031 Women's World Cup with, you know, partners here in CONCACAF. So what would it mean to have the Women's World Cup here on U.S. soil, and especially for this younger generation, just to kind of see it, believe it, achieve it type deal?
I mean, it's so cool. I remember being bummed when we withdrew the previous bid. Obviously the World Cup, the Men's World Cup is coming here next year, which already feels huge. Like, my company is preparing for it. I feel like all of the host cities are preparing for it, as they should be. It's such a huge opportunity. And it's so exciting. I mean, the idea that we would get to watch our favorite players play for the national team in a real high stakes tournament, and all of these other players from other countries that we love to see play every 4 years, every cycle, having them here, having our fans see them play in person. I think about the growth of the game around the 1999 Women's World Cup, and imagine if we could do that again, but starting from where we're at now, and that kind of explosion of awareness, of, you know, fan engagement. I think it would be so fun. And so I'm excited. I hope that we get the bid, and I think it would be really cool.
I mean, I have a feeling we are getting that bit. There's going to be like, because, you know, when you look, think about it, just like you said, I was also bummed. I'm like, why not 2026 man, 2027 woman? But I also understand, if you think about strategically, you give a little bit of time and then bring it back again in case you see like, you know, kind of a dip in like interest. But also, let's not forget, FIFA recently announced, you know, this potential club World Cup for women, then they took it down and turned it into Women's Champions Cup to be introduced in 2026. And that, I think, and in 2028, we're, you know, actually going in with a, you know, Women's Club World Cup, which I think it's the ultimate product for broadcast. Think about WSL versus NWSL, like literally the best players in the world against each other. And by then it will be even bigger, like the way you're, you know, describing the growth and like the amount of, I think, investment hopefully will happen on the pitch. But what are your thoughts on these new competitions from that perspective? Are you as excited as I am to see this product, or you have some doubts around it?
I wouldn't say I have any doubts. I mean, I think that from a commercial standpoint, everybody wants more soccer. Everybody wants to see the best players playing against each other. Everybody wants to see those top clubs who are playing, for example, in Champions League, facing up against our very own NWSL. I think that would be so cool. I was actually speaking on my podcast earlier this week with Lynn Williams, who now on Seattle Reign, but last year played in the Champions Cup for CONCACAF, which was a qualifier for the Club World Cup that was supposed to be in 2026, now is 2028, with Gotham. And she was concerned that as they had it planned, Lynn was saying that she's glad that they pushed it because the way their calendar was set up, they had like three game weeks in a row. They were traveling to other countries in the region in the middle of an NWSL season. And the idea that the match calendar was not given the kind of forethought and planning that is required to just insert a whole nother world tournament into these players' calendars, which I think kind of goes back to my point earlier, not so much men and women, but like, the insertion of a new tournament, the calendar needs to be considered. The player's health needs to be considered. I think the men's game has been experiencing this a lot, especially in the Premier League, where players are getting injured so often because they're playing every other day. Mm-hmm. So my thought on the new tournament is great. Let's just do, and I think this is what FIFA is kind of admitting, let's just plan for it properly and ensure that the safety of the players is the first priority.
Totally.
I was going to say, yeah, how do we, we're all obviously very passionate soccer / football fans here, and we want to see as many matches as possible. But like you said, there is that fine line of they are human, right? They can't go out and play six matches a week for our entertainment and fun and that kind of stuff like that. So how do we kind of find that balance of growing the game, especially here in the US, without it being detrimental to our favorite players and the top players who then potentially get hurt? Or is that the million or billion dollar question there?
I think literally, yeah, billions, a multiple billions dollar question. But it's something that I think the global soccer world is grappling with right now. And something that as a former player, we can't always just prioritize the money. We have to prioritize the safety of the players. And I think there are a lot of great people out there advocating for that.
I think that's the quote of this episode, right? I mean, I know that we're always follow the money as sports business journalists and, you know, looking into it from like investment, growth, whatever. But yeah, totally. This is like, these are humans with lives and families and health. And I guess, you know, less injury, longer playtime for a good player. You know, that's just why taking them out so early. Again, I think there's so many examples of like earlier, I think 90s, you know, soccer world where we saw so many players got injured and left early because of that. And perhaps technology and science that put into men's soccer helps them. Now we want to see it for the women, like you just said. Yeah.
Yeah. And not to have a terrible segue, but not to say, speaking of injuries, but you, like you said, you had to retire because of those persistent injuries at the end of your career. But on the day that you announced your retirement in January of 2024, you also announced the new career that you now have.
I know, it was crazy.
Yeah, right? Like, what are the chances? Great timing on that one. You know, you're the editor-in-chief of the new women's vertical, soccer vertical at the Men in Blazers Network. So I'd love to talk to you about, you know, the excitement of joining, you know, Men in Blazers and Roger Bennett and just everything that you guys are building over there. So how did that come about, and why was that something you wanted to do literally the day you retired from being a professional soccer player.
I know. It was a quick transition, you know. The summer prior, I had done World Cup coverage with Raj and with Men in Blazers. We did live Twitch streams during the women's national team games, and then we did these live reaction shows right after. And I think I just recognized that there was such an opportunity there. I loved working with Raj. I think that our vision together for what the women's game could be was really, really aligned. I was already doing a podcast, and Raj just kind of invited me to join up. And unfortunately, when I realized that I couldn't play, I kind of had this opportunity on the table, and I was really grateful for that. There's a lot of uncertainty when a player retires. I was like so obsessed with where I was going to get health insurance from. And I like couldn't, I was just like, oh my God, like, what am I going to do? And, you know, luckily I had a job offer. And I think that looking back, it was a really silver lining to what honestly was like the hardest and most difficult experience learning and dealing with my knee and realizing I would have to retire. And now I'm here at the women's game. I'm the editor in chief. We have a team of five on the women's game, which I'm very, very proud of. The women that I work with are all so incredible at their jobs. We produce usually 2 to 3 podcasts a week. One of them is with my co-hosts, Lynn Williams and Becky Sauerbrunn. That comes out on Tuesdays. It's called Good Vibes. It recaps whatever is going on in the soccer world, from the national team to the NWSL to the WSL, all of the breaking news. And then on Thursdays, we release our interview show, which is called Friendlies. Coming up this week, we have Kristen Press, but we've had some top players from around the world come on the show. So I'm really, really proud of that. And then we do some live reaction shows to national team games. We have this another very quirky show called Sammy Banana Phone. If you know, you know, and if you don't, you should maybe listen to it if you like quirky shows. So I've learned so much. I've loved helping create this community around the women's game, around women's soccer. I truly feel like I'm so connected to the audience, and that has been almost a replacement for the team, the sense of being on a team and camaraderie that I miss from playing. So I'm really grateful to everybody who listens, and we have so much to do this year. So I'm really excited for the opportunity.
You know what's so funny? You're so good at this. Like, I've interviewed a lot of players. They're not as comfortable in front of a microphone or a camera as you are. So you must have been either a natural or you really like, you know, I don't know. I've like probably watched sporadically a lot of different episodes that you've done, but there's certain things about like, you know, I'm almost like, wow, I haven't seen in a long time a player actually do the journalistic work. So like, and this is not to like make you feel blushed or anything, it is, it really comes through. And do you like being the interviewer instead of being interviewed? You love it?
I do like it.
I can tell.
To your point, I hate admitting this, but like it literally makes so much sense. I was always the kid in school that like wanted to read out loud. And so I do think that there's something about me, maybe I'm just like a control freak where I'm like, oh, like when I'm doing the talking or the leading or the reading, I like love that. And I think a lot of this job is kind of like guiding the conversation and finding the right question. And I do really like finding the right questions to ask people when I'm doing an interview. I think that it's kind of coming at topics that they get asked about a lot from a new angle where maybe they haven't thought about it that way, and they get to open up and think about something in this new light from this huge goal that they scored or this team that they got traded to or whatever. So I think there's a little bit of creativity to it. And again, I have a really, really talented team of women working with me. So it's been super fun.
And what is the biggest learning curve to be on this side of the microphone?
Honestly, I wish I had a fun one for you, but it's giving context to names and teams and what you're talking about, especially when you're talking to a friend and you're referencing, remember that time that Kelly told us? And it's like, I need to say, remember that time in 2016 when Kelly O'Hara told us and we were in this hotel at national team camp? You need to set the scene way more. And when you're talking to your friend, you like don't want to. You want to just talk to your friend, but you have to remember that there's people listening and you need to let them in on it too.
That's like what I was hearing from my editor all the time. Like, we don't know anything about what you're talking about. You have to set the scene.
It's context. I'm still learning it.
And you mentioned Kelly because there is one scene at this NWSL documentary that I was cracking up. You guys are in Gotham game, the playoff game. And she's like retiring. And then you guys are having this very intimate conversation about having a real job. And you're just like, you're talking to each other. I'm like, how do people work 8 hours a day or something like that? And I was like, oh my God.
How do they?
How do we?
I don't know. I really don't know.
Yeah, that was so funny. It was great. I hope she's doing, I mean, she also is doing great. But yeah.
We do. I think we just do it, you know, A, it's something we're obviously passionate about, and B, you know, you got to keep the lights on somehow. So I guess there's worse things that we could be doing than sitting here and talking to someone like you. So we are definitely very blessed that we get to do this for work. So I don't know if we want to keep you here for 8 hours, as I'm sure you have other things. You mentioned you have all those other shows and other things to do. But I guess, you know, again, you've been at this quote unquote real job now for over a year. So I would just love how you guys continue to grow, you know, everything you're building there at the Women's Game and in the Men in Blazers Network, knowing that, you know, they just got some investment, they're acquiring some other properties, and it seems it's the sky's the limit, you know, over there for you guys. So I would just love to hear, you know, without giving away too many government secrets, what's kind of on the horizon, especially on the women's side, knowing, like you said, we have another World Cup coming up, and then hopefully in a few years too, we have one coming to US soil.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the NWSL season starting up is a really big moment for us. I think our team has grown. And so just expanding really what we're capable of week over week. I know that there has been talk of some new shows joining up, coming into our podcast feed. We already have such incredible talent working with us. And I think the hope is to work with them even more. We have a few other new show ideas that I'm very excited about that I can't really reveal yet because nothing's official. I know that we want to get out and do some live shows. Those are so much fun to be with our audience in person. And we do have one that we are working on that will be announced soon. Our presence at the NWSL Championship is always so much fun and such a huge moment for us. Last year, like I mentioned earlier, was so incredible to go to Kansas City, to see that stadium in person, and to just witness the drama and the chaos that is the NWSL Championship. So definitely lots on the horizon, and I will shamelessly plug us to anybody that is listening. We would love if you could subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. It would really, really help us continue to grow and provide even more coverage from what is already, I think, a really fun couple of podcasts.
This is amazing. I mean, you amassed an unmatched success on the field as a player, and now you're doing certainly the same in your new media venture for the Women's Game. Please check it out. Like she said, please, you know, follow this amazing podcast and everything else she's doing. I personally love your banana stuff because I think it's hilarious.
There's a new one coming out tomorrow. So,
okay. Tomorrow meaning, I guess, another, like, we're going to, you know, we don't use the word tomorrow here in the podcast.
Fair enough. There was a new podcast episode out on March 12th, everybody. So go back and listen to that one.
There's that context that you mentioned earlier, right?
I know. I can't believe I fell into that trap myself.
Is it so funny? But it is true. But thank you so much for being here, giving us the time. This is amazing. You know, this is it. We want to keep you here forever. Like Michael said, I'm sure you have better things to do. This is it for another edition of Finest of Football. Thanks to you, the legendary Sam Uys, my co-host and my bestie, Michael Lauré, our producer, Ethan Joseph, and our video and social media producer, Luis Yeo. Thanks for listening. And please also follow us and add us to your listening list. Thank you.